another episode of Multiverse Musings, a DC Comics podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam. And with me, as always, is my co-host, Jordan. Jordan, how are you?
No, Jordan. Only Bebo.
Oh, please. Don't. You see, you blow the lead right off the gate. Like, nobody knows what we're talking about. And you come in.
Well, if they saw the episode title, they know what we're talking about.
Well, that is true.
But I got to give our Batcat wedding countdown. As of this episode being recorded, we are 82 days away from the Batcat wedding and something else happening related to that on July 4th, which we'll talk about in our news. So I'll say that.
Well, it's getting closer, and you're happy about that. And
I'm very happy about that.
I could care less. but that's just me. Other than your excitement for that, you're doing all right, Jordan?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. How about you?
Well, I'm doing, so I'm sort of in the middle. My hockey team lost their first playoff game last night, so I'm miserable over that. But I am getting ready to launch my first ever co-written, creator-owned comic book. We're in the process of setting up the Kickstarter for that, so I'm excited for that. And I will clue in our listeners for more on that when it goes live, if they're interested. But
congratulations, man.
Well, it's not there yet. Don't congratulate me just yet. Let's get it off the ground first, and then and then we'll worry about
fair
all
enough,
that. But it's exciting times on that front.
And I'll say your hockey team is doing better than my basketball team, because my basketball team didn't make the playoffs this year.
I'll take some solace in that. But we are going to do, since people probably did read our title, we are doing a today's episode is a season retrospective of Legends of Tomorrow, Season 3. Before we do that, we brought in a guest to help us talk about Legends of Tomorrow. Who is the guest that you've scoured the multiverse to find today?
Yeah, well, joining us today is Tom from DC Daily Drop. I'm sort of bringing him on here to talk about Legend Season 3. He brought me on his podcast last year to talk about Legend Season 2. That was the first podcast that I ever that I ever was on, actually. So,
listeners, if you're upset about Jordan being a podcaster, send your hate mail to Tom. you'll have his email shortly at the end of the episode. But for now, welcome, Tom. We're actually really happy to have you on.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me on. Always happy to talk DC stuff. And yeah, I apologize to everyone for, I guess, partially being responsible for Jordan getting into the podcasting world.
There we go. So there it is. It's the equivalent of the Joel Schumacher Batman and Robin apology. and with that, we've closed the book on Batman and Robin. So if you want to listen to that podcast, it'll be up at some point. Let's get into the news, Jordan.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, I'll give us a little segue, because I was talking about our countdown to the Batcat wedding. Turns out, as if I wasn't already excited enough about July 4th, when Batman number 50 drops, Catwoman is getting another solo series. As much as I loved Rebirth, at the beginning of Rebirth, her New 52 series, of course, was canceled, and she was one of the characters who didn't get a series at the start of Rebirth, a solo series. Of course, that's been made up for pretty much by the fact that she's been pretty much the second lead of Batman, which has been amazing. But I have missed her having a solo series. Her New 52 series, a lot of it was amazing, especially the very end, Frank Thierry's run, right before the New 52 ended. But yes, she's getting a Rebirth series. It's going to be written and drawn by Joelle Jones, who has quickly become one of my favorite comic book artists. But I'm excited to see what she does as a writer, too, here. So I'm so excited about that. So she's going to do the art, and then the color is going to be done by Laura Allred. We have a cover done by Joelle Jones, which is a beautiful cover of Selina in her wedding dress, holding Batman number 50 with her cats all around her. That looks awesome, and we've also got a synopsis for the issue that I'll go ahead and read. The wedding night's barely over, but Catwoman's back on the streets, this time to expose a copycat who's pulling heists around Gotham City. As Selina cracks the whip on her former criminal cohorts, she's attracting unwanted attention from one of Gotham's most dangerous groups. The mob? Nope. Try the GCPD. And as if the Bat Bride didn't have enough problems, there's an all-new villain determined to make trouble for all nine of Selina's lives. Don't miss the start of an all-new monthly series written and illustrated by Eisner Award nominee Joelle Jones.
All right, there it is. Tom, I'll throw it over to you. What are your thoughts on Catwoman getting her own solo title post wedding?
I think it's well deserved. Obviously, Catwoman's capable of carrying a series by herself, and I'm always a fan. Even though you can get a lot of her in Batman and other things lately, I'm always a fan. This will put the emphasis right on Catwoman, which is always great. Like recently, the Mira, there's the Mira miniseries, which is great. You can see plenty of her in Aquaman, but I like just a series that focuses directly on that character. So I'm glad to hear it.
Jordan, we know you're over the moon. You kind of went in that direction.
Oh, yes.
You kind of gave that away. I'll say, look, I love the character of Catwoman. I'm glad she's getting her own series again. She's, like Tom was saying, she's proven that she can carry her own book several times. I'm probably not going to check this one out for two reasons. One, I'm reading enough books as it is, and I don't have room for any more on my list. And two, I'm kind of burnt out on Catwoman. To me, she's being overexposed.
That's so not possible, Adam.
Well, it is for sane people impossible. Who are not obsessed with Batcat Wedding. But so I'm going to pass on this title. I hope it sells well. Jordan's probably going to buy 5 copies a month. So that will ensure some longevity. Again, I'm happy she's getting her own book, but I'm tapped out on Catwoman.
Personally. Alrighty. Well, yeah, I guess I'll just wrap up. I kind of already said it. I'm so hyped about this. I can't wait. Like, I was already so excited for July 4th. And with this title, I mean, starting up, I'm over the moon. And like I said, Joelle Jones probably right now, she's honestly number 2 behind Jim Lee at this point in terms of my favorite artists. And her art is so breathtaking. And I can't wait to see her art in this book and to see her as a writer, too, because I've never read anything she's written. But yeah, I'm really excited, and I can't wait. I mean, Catwoman's my second favorite fictional character of all time, right behind Batman. And so, I mean, I'm so glad that I'll be able to get a second book. Obviously, she'll still be in Batman, but to get a second book with her, I mean, I couldn't be happier.
There we go. There's the definitive word from Jordan on his love for this news. What's next, Jordan?
Yeah, well, moving on to some film news. We have gotten word that Christina Hodson is going to be writing a script for the Batgirl movie that Joss Whedon was previously working on. She was working on the Gotham City Sirens script previously.
It was Birds of Prey, not Gotham City Sirens.
Well, I believe initially it was Gotham City Sirens, but then there's been all this shakeups where, like, it's being reported that, oh, now the film's a Birds of Prey film, and they haven't been very definitive on what the film is, but I believe I could be wrong, but I believe at the time the news originally broke about Hodson working on that film, Sirens.
Okay.
I believe so.
All right.
But anyway, yeah, she's working on the Batgirl script now. And, well, I guess that's all the news there is on this, but yeah, she's working on the Batgirl script.
Tom, what are your thoughts on this?
Batgirl's obviously a great character. I don't know how soon we'll be getting this, but I think DC wants to do something with Batgirl, Harley Quinn, all those cool female characters from Gotham. And I think this is just one way that they're trying to figure out how to do them. I think a Batgirl film could be awesome. But yeah, it's just another one that is in development. And I'm just really curious to see how this is all going to shake out, how this is going to fit in. It seems like they're waiting for the Matt Reeves Batman to sort of solidify its plans before they move forward with figuring out the rest of Gotham, which makes sense to me. So I'm just curious right now to see where everything's going to get fit in. I don't know much about Hodson as a writer. I haven't seen any of her movies, so I'm open to seeing it, but yeah, just wondering how all of Gotham is going to come together and the DC movie universe.
Well, the interesting thing for me is this. Firstly, I think doing a Batgirl film in a post Wonder Woman world makes the most obvious sense possible. I mean, Warner Brothers would be stupid not to explore the possibility of a Batgirl film, in my opinion. And I'm happy that that there is a female writer, a female's voice, sort of, guiding this character to the screen. Nothing against Joss Whedon, because unlike most of the internet, I don't hate the guy. Look, he was hired to do a job on Justice League, and he did it. But I loved his stuff when he did Buffy and co-created Angel and Firefly and all that stuff. So I'm not Mr. Anti Joss Whedon, but I think, I like the idea of a female writer being on a female character. The other thing that I find interesting is that, Tom touched on it, and I'll sort of elaborate on what I've read. You touched on the fact that Warner Brothers is probably waiting for Matt Reeves' Batman to solidify. And Jordan, our previous guest, Mario Francisco Robles from Revenge of the Fans, wrote a piece saying that from what he's heard from his sources is that Matt Reeves and Warner Brothers have recently had several meetings about where the Batman is headed. There's some clarity where that's concerned, and basically, what that is allowing Warner Brothers to do now is to sort of put the Gotham-centric films back into play, which is why we're now hearing of Batgirl getting going again and stuff like that. Also, it's worth pointing out that a lot of people were insinuating that, well, if she's got Batgirl, then that means Birds of Prey / Gotham City Sirens or whatever the heck it and would have been was a dead project. But according to Humberto Gonzalez from The Wrap, that's not the case. Apparently, according to his sources, Warner Brothers was ecstatic about her script for that film, which is what led her to get Batgirl. And according to him, they are now shopping the Birds of Prey film out to directors. What I find interesting about that potential possibility is that maybe with her being writing both, there is connective tissue for the two films. It could be a possibility. Which, look, I think it's smart, first of all, to have it be a Birds of Prey film, the other film be a Birds of Prey film, because to me, as cool as Gotham City Sirens is, as a film, who's going to be their antagonist, their foil, what are they going to be? Are they just going to be going on a heist with no opposition whatsoever? Like, what would it have been?
I mean, they've
just
had their own comic series, Adam, though.
I get it, but comics and film, they're different beasts. You know what I'm saying? So there has to be some alteration, because I don't, like I said, I don't want just an Ocean's 11, which is now Ocean's 8, the female version, with Gotham City Sirens characters there. There has to be something else. And I think the idea of putting the Birds of Prey with those characters is a smart idea. And then going on to Batgirl from there, or vice versa. I like the idea that these projects could potentially be directly connected. But again, we have to wait on more information as things solidify. But, aside from the writer, I don't know much about her. I know that she's doing the other film that she's on that's a high profile is the Bumblebee Transformers spinoff, which doesn't have Michael Bay involved. So that's, that might be work more favorably for that film amongst the general audiences and critics. So we'll see. But I'm going to roll with it for now and be excited about the potential of Batgirl coming to the screen. And hope we hear more soon. But what's your take on Batgirl, Jordan?
Yeah, well, I'm with you in that. I think WB would be nuts if they didn't move forward with this film. I mean, after the success of Wonder Woman, and given that Batman is their most bankable character, it seems like a no-brainer to me that that they'd go forward with this film. In terms of Hodson in particular, I'm not familiar with her at all. I mean, the only thing I know her from is the fact that she was working on the other on the Gotham City Sirens or Birds of Prey movie or whatever it is now. Personally, I'm really hoping it's still Gotham City Sirens. I need Catwoman, period.
That doesn't mean you're not going to get Catwoman. It just means... You don't like the idea of her as a villain, even though that's how she started. And she did steal a wedding dress, but let's not go there. But yeah.
Saw that Twitter conversation.
Yes, and I disagree with you entirely, but let's move on from that. This is not about Catwoman.
Don't get me started on that. Anyway, if Catwoman isn't a Birds of Prey movie, it makes me apprehensive that she'd be portrayed more as a villain than I'd want her to. But in terms of this movie, this Batgirl movie, as an isolated project, I'm very excited about it, and I'm hoping that Hodson writes a great script and that a new director comes on board. And I'm excited to see what happens with this film.
Awesome. What's next?
Oh, boy. This was a very, very good news week for me, Adam. A very good one. Because in addition to the Catwoman solo title news, we got Michael Rosenbaum and let me give some background here. Michael Rosenbaum and Tom Welling were at AwesomeCon recently. I guess it was the weekend before. Yeah.
I think it was Easter weekend, I think.
I believe it was. Yeah, our buddy Zach Moore from Always Holding a Smallville, who was on a recent episode with us and reviewed season one of Smallville with us, he was there.
Yeah.
But anyway, Tom Welling and Michael Rosenbaum had two panels there. They were on the General Superman panel, and then they were also on the their own Smallville panel, both of which I believe you can find online, because I've watched both of them online. I believe that they're still up. They had two panels there, both of which were great. And at one of the panels, I believe it was at the Smallville one, specifically Smallville one, basically they talked about the idea of doing a Smallville animated reunion. And Michael Rosenbaum even mentioned that he talked to Al Goff about doing one. So this is something that I've been hoping for. Even before they said this is something I really wanted. I've been thinking that it would be an awesome idea for them to do an animated movie, sort of like they revived Batman 66 and Batman the Brave and the Bold recently in animated movies, with the cast returning and set. Specifically what I want is something set after the events of the Season 11 comics. I mean, I'll take anything. So if they wanted to adapt the Season 11 comics to part of them, that I'd be down for totally. But my ideal choice would be for them to do something like a new story in the Smallville world, something after the Season 11 comics. Anyway, I've been hoping for an animated movie. They played around with the idea, I think, more so of an animated series. But either way, if we could get a Smallville reunion with the cast returning in some form or another, I mean, I would be ecstatic. I mean, this is just them talking about it got me so excited. So I think this is so awesome. I guess I sort of gave my thoughts now. So why don't you guys go ahead and give your
thoughts? Tom, go ahead. What are your thoughts on a potential Smallville animated film series or what have you?
I am a massive Smallville fan, so any continuation, any form, comic book, animation, whatever, I am down for. I've thought for a while that an animated series, I'd be cool with a movie, but an animated series would be great because just something along the lines of Superman, the animated series meets Smallville set in that continuity. I think that would be awesome. You could either focus on Clark like it's always been done, or you could make it more of a Justice League and get introduced to the Smallville versions of Batman and Wonder Woman and just looking at the world of everything. I don't know how likely this is to happen, but I think it makes a lot of sense, and maybe it's something that we need to wait a few more years for nostalgia for Smallville to kick in.
20th anniversary is coming up.
And 2021 will be 20 years. And
wow, that already, jeez.
10 years since the finale.
Good Lord, I'm getting old.
That would make sense, and I think there's a lot you can do.
Yeah. I've said it on this show. I said it on our season one episode that to me, there are episodes that I have, you know, a love-hate relationship with. On the whole, I love Smallville, and I've said that it, for me, when it came out, for the first 5 or 6 years of its run, it carried the torch for the Superman character when, at the time, the Superman comics were abysmal. DC and Warner Bros. Had no clue what the heck they were going to do with the movie. Some would argue they still don't, depending on who you talk to. But, you know, Smallville carried the torch for, no pun intended, but Smallville torch.
Nice one, Adam.
Yeah, for the character. So I'm all for this idea. I understand where Jordan's coming from in terms of doing something new, but I think for the sake of, if you're going to do, ideally, like the idea of a animated series is fascinating to me, like a whole full-blown series. That would be my ideal scenario. What is more likely to me is probably a series of direct-to-home media animated movies. You know, like we have with the DC animated films now.
Even better example, the Batman 66 one specifically.
Right. Yeah. Or something like that. Yeah. And I would personally, just because the comic books, you know, are read by a certain segment of the fandom, that I think for general audience purposes, I think it would be smart to adapt some of those runs, and go from there, because that was really a great launching point post the Smallville finale. So I think calling from those, I think is a good move. And so maybe what they could do is test the waters with a couple of those adaptations, and then from there spin off into a full blown animated series. Now, of course, nobody consults me because Warner Brothers doesn't even know I exist. But that's what I would do if given the reins. So I'm on board with this. Get it done, Warner Brothers. I don't know who you have to, what the legal wrangling of all that's involved, but do it. And I'm on board. Thumbs up for me.
Absolutely. I'm right there with you. I am right there with you. All righty. Well, moving on to a little bit more TV news. We have news, very surprising news, that Colton Haynes is returning to Arrow as a series regular for season 7.
Tom, thoughts?
This was really surprising but exciting news. I don't know how it's going to fit in with where Roy has been basically since towards the end of season 3 in his story, and especially his recent appearance in season 6. I don't know how it makes sense for him to return as a series regular, but I really like Colton Haynes and I'm a fan of the Roy Harper character, and I think I'm very excited to see how he fits in and seeing more of him as a series regular. However he fits in, I'm glad that it's happening. I think there's a lot of cool things they could still do with Roy. We just sort of got to meet him in the first few seasons, as crazy as that is, because he was in it quite a bit. And so I still think there's a lot of storytelling potential for Roy, and hopefully we get to see classic Green Arrow and Arsenal team-ups. That would be something I would definitely like to see.
Yeah, I think for me, look, the news came out of left field. I didn't expect that at all, especially with his last appearance on the show, where he was basically brought in to usher Thea out. I thought, all right, well, that's it. They rode off into the sunset, and, you know, so long for those two. And then here comes this announcement. Now, I like Tom. I enjoyed Colton Haynes as Roy Harper, and I enjoy the character anyway, outside of the Arrowverse. So this to me is welcome news. It's going to be really interesting to see Roy without Thea, because I think all that relationship mumbo jumbo bogged the character down. So I'm excited to see where they go with him without the crutch of Thea there. Look, the only thing they could do to make me happier about the next season of Arrow is to announce that they're killing off Felicity in the finale, and that they're going to fix the Black Canary conundrum they've created, and then I'd be popping bottles of champagne for season 7. But I can't wait to see what happens with Roy. It's exciting.
The only reason I don't fire back at you when you say stuff about Felicity like that is because at least I know you're not saying something about Lana, and I take that as a win.
Well, I'll tell you right now, Felicity is 10 times worse than Lana was. And Lana was written was in some bad episodes. But I don't like Felicity. That whole relationship is one of the most forced things I've ever seen on one of these CW television shows.
Obviously, you know, I mean, I like Felicity, but obviously,
You're sort of neutral. You're neither here nor there.
Right.
We've had guests on that are.
But you know how I feel about Lana, so I just take it as a win.
We've been over the fact that I can't stand some things they did with Lana. We'll get into them when those seasons arise. I'm not gonna sugarcoat them for you. I'll tell you like it is, or the way I see it. But for right now.
For right now, I'll take it as a win.
Yeah, take it because you're gonna get a year full of it when we get to season four.
There's a lot to talk about with both Felicity and Lana.
Oh yeah.
There's some similarities there in some ways.
It just bugs me that they bought the main reason that one of the main reasons it bugs me is because they botched the Black Canary character so bad that it's just I wish they could fix it. I just don't see how they're going to do it. They're hell bent on giving us this Felicity garbage. Whether we want it or not, so it is what it is. But what is your feeling on Colton Haynes returning there?
Yes, well, I was so surprised by this news, like you said, especially because of how they just recently wrote him off the show, and he and Thea and Nyssa were sort of going on their own to go on this mission. And Mark Guggenheim, right after that episode, an interview dropped with him where he talked about, he sort of speculated, he said Thea, there's no plans to bring Thea back, but he speculated that maybe they could do either an animated series or one of their comic book tie-ins or one of their novel tie-ins where we see what's going on with Thea and Roy and Nyssa. And that still could happen with this news. But, I mean, it sort of felt like that we were never going to see them on the show again, or if we did, that it would just be, here or there, sort of like when Roy came back in season four. I'm shocked by this news. First of all, it has me nervous about what this means for Thea and Roy and Nyssa. Like, I feel like this could mean that things go very bad for them. And maybe something bad happens. Maybe either Thea and Roy break up. Maybe something bad happens to Thea. It makes me nervous about what's going on with them destroying the Lazarus Pits. Maybe we'll find out what happens. I mean, I assume we'll find out what happens in terms of that. But it makes me nervous about that. Because I do ship Thea Roy, and I was kind of hoping that they would get their happy ending. But
that name just... Like, these ship names are terrible.
You hate every ship name.
I do. They're stupid. But go on. Yeah.
Anyway, I love Colton Haynes in the role of Arsenal. I think he's great. And I've missed him on the show. And one thing I will say is that I think, and I can already tell now that Thea's gone, I think that the show doesn't quite feel complete without a version of, Speedy or Arsenal or Red Arrow. In my opinion, it doesn't quite feel complete. A Green Arrow show doesn't quite feel complete without one of them. And so I think now that Thea's gone, I am glad that Roy will be coming back and being an Arsenal on the team. And I just a theory I have, I think maybe we could see just Green Arrow and Arsenal out in the field together next season. Because, I mean, right now on Arrow, the team is broken apart. And Diggle's working with Argus now. And Brene's in the hospital. And Dinah and Curtis are on their own. So I think that maybe next season we could see, at least for part of the season, maybe just Green Arrow and Arsenal out in the field together. And that would be really cool. Just one sort of theory that I had about this, I'm not sure how likely this is, but it was something that popped into my head, that Roy could be a clone, that this Roy that we're seeing now could be a clone, sort of like what they did in Young Justice, where there was a clone Roy who basically it turned out that Roy had been a clone the whole time, and that there was the real Roy was trapped in like a chamber. So I could see them doing something like that, where this Roy is a different Roy than the Roy that we'd seen earlier on the show. So that's just a theory I had. I don't know how likely it is, but it did pop in my head. But in any case, I'm happy to have Colton Haynes back on the show. Surprising news, but a very pleasant surprise.
Yeah. Can't wait to see what happens.
Absolutely.
And is that it for the news, Jordan?
That is it for the news.
So we're getting in the Wave Rider, and we're going to talk about some Legends of Tomorrow.
Indeed.
All right. I guess, Jordan, we haven't really talked about Legends all that much aside from the the premiere and the crossover, correct?
Yeah. We reviewed the premiere, and then we reviewed Crisis on Earth X. So.
Right. So, yeah. What I think we should do before we get into, like, you know, specifics or favorite episodes and things like that,
mm-hmm.
just sort of give our general thoughts on Legends as, you know, as a show and as a concept, and then we'll go from there.
Okay.
For me, I'll say that I love Legends of Tomorrow. This season it's been one of my favorites in terms of all the Arrowverse shows. And look, the reason why I like it is that it knows exactly what it is. The tone is clearly defined, and it's just a ton of fun. Like it's that show that no matter what crazy things they do, you know, more. I think every episode, to a degree, has left me with a smile on my face at the end of the episode. So I really, really have fun with this show, and I'm glad. I will say that I'm glad it's back. They've all been renewed, but I'm glad the Legends is back. And
That was the news that we forgot to talk about.
All the CW DC shows have been renewed. It's not really a shock because for CW to cancel something, it has to literally be, like, nobody has to be watching it, pretty much.
I'm never going to forgive them for canceling No Tomorrow after one season.
Well, you were probably the only one that was watching it. And look, it ties in with the show, No Tomorrow. It didn't happen tomorrow. It was just one season, and that was it. So it's very apt with the title.
I did not think about that, but unfortunately, you are quite right.
Maybe it was built as a one-season, a one-off. You never know. Probably not, but...
No, it was. It ended on a cliffhanger, so no, okay, it was not.
Screw that idea. well, they should have done it that way. It wouldn't have pissed people off. But that's not the case with Legends or the other CW shows. They've all been renewed, and I'm happy that Legends was part of the bunch. Tom, what's your general feelings on Legends?
Kind of like what you said there. It knows what it is now. I think after season one, it became much lighter. The last two seasons have been a lot more fun. They've, like you said, they know what it is. So it still has heart. It still has dramatic moments, but it's usually just a blast to watch. And it doesn't always work. I think that they've got so much going on, so many different character interactions. That's the strength of the show, is seeing a bunch of different characters come together and a bunch of different storylines going on at once. And that's what I like best about it. Some of that stuff doesn't always work, just whatever reason. Some of the places they visit, you know, some of the time periods they go to don't always interest me as much, but then they're able to deliver some really good stuff too. And the best thing I can say about Legends is that, like, this doesn't sound like a compliment, but it is. I truly mean it. Is I always look forward to a new episode. And that's tough to do when there's so many DC shows out there that I watch. And when you get in the middle of the season, it can get a little repetitive, it seemed like. But Legends never gets that way. Even though there's kind of a formula to what they do, I think it always feels fresh because there's so many new character interactions and always visiting a new time period. Yeah, and that's what works.
I agree with you there. Nothing's ever stagnant because there's a certain grouping of characters that they're focusing on in each individual episode, which probably is what allows them to keep the budgets down, right? Because they're keying in on certain characters and the special effects only kick in, you know, to different degrees depending on which character is being keyed in on. But I agree with you there. It's because I watch all the DC shows, and I'll agree with you. There are some where, well, there's one in particular for me, and I don't want to get into an argument with Jordan. We'll get there, but, you know, I'll just say it and then move on. The Flash has been a chore for me this whole season to sit through. It's like I roll my eyes pretty much every time there's a new Flash episode. I'm like, can we just get through this so I can watch Black Lightning? But with Legends, it's like I'm always pumped to watch it. I'm like, oh, good, another Legends is on the night. And so I'm always excited to watch it. But is there anything else you want to mention before I turn it over to Jordan for his general thoughts?
No, that's. I think you covered it pretty well there, and it's always like you said, it does feel fresh because they focus on a group of characters, and then they constantly bring in someone new to change up the character dynamics. And Legends was created, and it works best just seeing more of characters from the other Arrowverse shows that you don't get to see a lot of. They don't have room for in the other shows, and bringing them onto the Wave Rider. And so that's what the best parts of Legends are.
Right, I agree. Jordan, thoughts?
Well, I will say, in general, Legends is my least favorite of the Arrowverse shows. But that's not to say I don't like it. I really like it. I just don't like it as much as the other ones. And that's because, for me, Legends is the show that I have the least emotional investment in. Legends is the show that I sort of just kick back, turn my brain off, and enjoy. And that's not a... I don't mean that necessarily as a bad thing. It does result in it being my least favorite of the shows, but I mean, I do enjoy it a lot. I have fun doing that. Like, it's a really fun show. Back when it was in season one, when it was on Thursday nights, and when I was in college at the time, I'd come back to my dorm room on Friday mornings, and I'd have the new Left Legends, because when I was in college, I didn't have a TV, so I couldn't watch them live. I'd watch them on the CW
on the app. Yeah,
on the website, actually. So I had a morning class on Fridays, and it was my last class of the week. So I'd get back from my morning class, and I'd put on Legends, and I'd just kick back. My week was over, and I'd just kick back and enjoy it. So I really enjoyed back then when it was on Thursdays in season one, and I would do that. And so anyway, but because of that, like, that's a good example for me in terms of the show, how it's been like that for me, how it's been this show that sort of is just the one that I kick back and just enjoy. And so the show's, I mean, it's just a lot of fun. In terms of the team, like, it's cool to have a team show like this. It actually reminds me a little bit of the Justice League International in the comics, where it's like this sort of all the B-list and C-list heroes, like Green Lantern Guy Gardner and Blue Beetle, and I'm trying to think who else was in the Fire and Ice on that team, I think. So it sort of feels like that in a lot of ways, just sort of like the fun, goofy Justice League team in a lot of ways. And it's really cool to have a show like this. I think they do a lot of cool stuff. Every once in a while, they will pull at the heartstrings. Like, there was a moment with Jax in season one where he, like, blew up this plantation that really, I felt, was a really good emotional moment. Stein's death this season was a really emotional moment. And then I thought a spoiler alert for this one. But in the season finale this year, Rip's death, I thought, was a really powerful emotional moment. So every once in a while, they'll really hit you in the feels like that. But for the most part, it's just a funny show. It's just a fun show. And, yeah, it's just a blast to watch.
One of the things that I was interested to see how it play out was having Damian Dark, not only this season, I think it was this season he came on. He wasn't in last season, was he? Or was he?
He was part of the Legion of Doom.
That's right, he was. But when he came on, it was an interesting development for me, because full disclosure, I hated season four of Arrow. I think it's terrible. And a large part was I couldn't stand the whole, mystical and magic Damian Dark aspect of when he was on Arrow. With the Legion of Doom, there wasn't as much of that, but this season they really keyed in on the magical aspect. And the interesting thing is, here on Legends, I'm perfectly fine with the magical stuff, and I actually liked Damian Dark here in this show.
It fits much better on Legends, because Arrow needs to be the grounded of the Arrowverse shows, and it didn't quite fit to have this sort of like Damian Dark. He's this mustache twirling magical villain. It didn't fit at all. He gave a great performance, but it just wasn't. It was so out of place on Arrow. And so I agree with you there. Once he came to Legends, and I do have a big issue with him this season. You know how I feel about Resurrections. I was groaning when they resurrected him this season.
So you must be miserable around Easter time, right? You just must hate the whole thing. The whole thing must just bother you. Just.
Okay, I'm not going to get into that. It's when it comes to superhero shows where it's an overused trope, Anyway, all I'll say is it bugged the hell out of me that they resurrected him this season. Even though I like the character on Legends, but I thought that was awful. But in terms of just the character, I do agree with you that he definitely fits much better on Legends, and all the mystical, magical stuff definitely fits a lot better on Legends than it did on Arrow. So I'm with you there.
Go ahead, Tom.
Damian is, he kind of reminds me of season 4 of Arrow, which I had similar feelings to you, Adam, but he does fit a little bit better here. He's a little more fun. I still can't fully embrace him just because I think it reminds me of season 4 of Arrow.
Sure.
But he does fit in better. And this year we got to see a little more to him instead of just mustache twirling. There's a little more depth to him. He had some good fun lines and some fun moments. Some was a little too wacky, but a lot of it worked better here.
That one episode where he had kidnapped Ray, and it was with Nora, and he was making all the dad jokes. That was the one where I thought they went a little too far with sort of his, I don't know what to call it, but just
I get where you're coming from, but I still was dying laughing as he was making those jokes. And I did like his, like I said, his sort of, I don't know if this is the right word, but his begrudging camaraderie with Ray Palmer that he developed over the course of the season. I tended to like that, for whatever reason,
I'll agree with you there. I did like that sort of dynamic. It was just that one episode. I think it was Daddy Darkest was that episode.
Right, yeah.
And it just got a little too. They went one step too far with it, I think, in that episode.
But what you were saying, I agree with what you were saying about, you know, where it touches on the emotional heartstrings from time to time. Like you know, we talked about it in our crossover episode. But when Victor Garber's Professor Stein, sacrifices himself to save the day and all that, his death scene was emotionally, stirring, but also shocking, because up until that point, at least I hadn't read it. I read it after the episode that he was leaving. So when they killed him off, I was like, damn, I really liked that.
You didn't know he was leaving until that episode?
I think they announced it after that episode. Like
They had announced because he was going on Broadway.
That's right. They said he was stepping away, you're right. I had figured in my head that, okay, they'll just write, like, the way the story was going, his daughter was about to have the baby. So I'm like, all right, when his daughter has the baby, they'll say he wants to go spend time with the grandkid.
And they pulled one over on us.
Yeah.
Because for most of this first half of the season, he and Jax were trying to figure out a way for him to separate from Jax, this firestorm or whatever. And so they were setting it up like that's what was going to happen, and they sort of switched it up on us. So yeah.
So I didn't see it coming, and then when it did, I'm like, damn, because I really like their dynamic, him and Jax. And then then Jax left, and that was another. It was like, there goes two people that I really enjoy, and so that was emotionally stirring. But also, Zari kind of the whole thing when she first came in with her brother, and even though I think some of it was a sham, but the actress sold it really well, where I was getting invested in that aspect of it. And I thought that they, because one of the other things that I think they pulled off really well was the whole Nate and Amaya relationship thing, because you knew that was, given the rule of time travel as bendable as they are, you knew that relationship couldn't last. And I think they played on that very well. And I really like the resolution was, when you realize that she was going to leave, spoilers, by the way, we're over the spoiler. We're going to talk about spoilers here throughout the episode. So if you're
waiting, and not the Stephanie Brown kind.
Yeah, definitely, definitely not. But if they brought her on one of these Arrow shows, that'd be cool. But,
that would be cool. But, it was to be on, she'll be on Young Justice season 3.
Right. And who knows, maybe in the live action Titans thing, you never know. So when Amaya makes a decision to to go back to Zambezi, and you know, she leaves Nate behind, that whole exchange. I thought that was pulled off really well. Usually, like I said, for me, the CW has issues with the way they handle their romantic relationships, but I thought this one was handled appropriately. That they knew where it was going. Like, they had a clear, defined, you know, beginning, middle, and end to it, and I thought it played itself out well. In terms of, let's sort of, I mean, run down some of our favorite episodes and go from there. Tom, what are some of your highlights? Like, I'm sure they'll intersect, so maybe we'll just pick from where you lead us. So what are some of your favorite episodes?
Well, head and shoulders above everything else for me was episode 4 of this season, Phone Home, when Ray, we go back to the 80s. That was my favorite episode of Legends by far, and it's maybe my favorite. It's my non-crossover. Besides crossovers, it's one of my favorite Arrowverse episodes in a long time. Nice. It was just a ton of fun, and it balanced it with the heart. And Ray Palmer is probably my favorite Legend. And so seeing him, an episode that really focuses on him, that was really great to see. And I thought it just balanced everything so well and easily, like, head and shoulders above.
Yeah, that was a great
episode. Any other episode I can think of.
And look, I mean, they weren't pulling their punches in terms of the ET, you know, references. Like, they went there, and just, I love it. Like just, and that's the thing. Any other one of the CW Arrow shows or Arrowverse shows would kind of sort of do a try harder to disguise what they were doing. You know, they're not, right. Whereas Legends just like, no, we're gonna do the scene with the bicycle and the whole nine yards.
I love how many movie references they put in the titles of episodes this year. I mean, Phone Home, we got the I, Ava episode, the No Country for Old Dads episode, I think one was called. Yeah. So, like, they went all out with movie references this season, I felt.
Yeah, I would say that. One of mine, I guess, that I'll key in on is...
Oh, hold on. Before we move on from Phone Home, I tend to prefer when they go to times more recent. Like, I just personally, I prefer when they go to, like, the 70s or the 80s. Sometimes it's not, you know, the 1800s. Right. That's what I tend to prefer. But I'm totally with you. I thought that was one of the best episodes this season. And I felt that I loved all the ET stuff in that episode. One of the funniest parts of that episode, I thought, was Nate almost sleeping with Ray's mom. That was really, really funny.
Yeah, and she turned out to be, was it like a dominator?
I believe so.
Right.
I believe so.
Again, that's a cool nod that they're picking up from the crossover from last season. You know, they're picking up the crumbs left over from that, which I think is cool.
And it was really cool to get they built on the Dominator. I mean, the Dominator's even... There was a cameo with the Dominator in the crossover this year.
Yeah, Supergirl was beating the crap out of it.
Supergirl was fighting one.
Yeah.
But I also love getting a Halloween episode, because this is another thing I can add to my annual Halloween DC rotation. So that was pretty cool. Along with the Smallville episode, Thirst.
Ooh.
Okay. See, now you're going to make me do it. Tom, you agree that's terrible, correct? Am I, based on your grunt,
I love Smallville, but I wouldn't say that's one of the best episodes.
Yeah. All right, so you are on the same page as I am.
But
no, I'll take this Halloween episode over that any day of the week. Thank you very much.
I completely... Listen, Thirst is my third favorite episode of all of Smallville, which is my favorite TV show of all time. So, in my opinion, Thirst, even though I love this episode, Phone Home, it doesn't even compare to Thirst, in my opinion.
Well, you're delusional and or drunk. I'm not sure which. So we'll go from there. One of my personal favorites was... I've pulled up the title here because I don't really have them on demand, as Jordan seems to do. I really like the Amazing Grace episode because I'm an Elvis fan. Like, I love Elvis. So to have that in, and that could have been a Halloween episode if it was, you know, scheduled in the right order. But I loved it, you know, the whole thing with the guitar. It felt, I mean, it reminded me of, didn't the Constantine TV show do something with a mystical instrument?
Yes, yeah. It was a record.
Yeah, all right. The Constantine was a record. This was the guitar. And I loved it because it keyed in on one of the you know the things about Elvis with his the supposed twin brother thing that he had. That's supposedly a thing. And I'm glad that Legends, you know, pulled that in, that bit of history, Elvis history. I just dug it. And look, anytime you want to throw in, you know, nods to Elvis songs on a show, I'm down for it. But I personally got a kick out of that episode. I just had so much fun with that episode. And the ghosts were kind of, in places, were kind of creepy. I like the visual look of them in terms of the CGI and all that. So that's one of the ones that I'll nominate as one of my personal favorites. Jordan, what's one of yours that you want to mention that we can discuss?
Well, I'll omit two of them. I would pick the season premiere, but we already talked about that one. So I'll sort of omit that one because we've reviewed it already. And also, Christ on Earth X, I'm going to go ahead and omit.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I didn't put that in because if you didn't really say that Crossover was an awesome episode, then I can't help you.
Right. Well, it's almost not really a Legends episode.
Right, no, but if somebody says, I didn't like the Crossover, it's like, what?
So I would go ahead and say that one of my favorites would be Ava. I really like that one. I thought it was cool. First of all, I got the scene where they go to Ava's house and meet her parents. One of my favorite movies is The Truman Show, and I got real Truman Show vibes from that, where they hired these actors who were ripped by these actors to betray her parents, and I thought that was really cool. In that episode, and seeing the whole world of Ava's, I thought that was really cool too. And then also just something that I remember from that episode is as soon as Amaya goes back to 1992, I remember thinking, I wish I could go on that time machine with her so that I could go back to 1992 and see Batman Returns in theaters.
Of course your mind would go there.
Of course.
I don't know if they had a theater in that village. Yeah, in Zambezi.
I'm going to go out on a limb that nobody in Zambezi saw Batman Returns.
Maybe I could go back to 1992, get to Zambezi, and then get from Zambezi to somewhere where they do have
now, correct me if I'm wrong. The village was in the timeline. When was the village burnt? When was the village destroyed? Is it that year, the same year?
Yeah, I believe it was 1992.
Okay. So as unfortunate as that scenario is for them, the people of Zambezi didn't have the misfortune of watching Batman and Robin, so God bless them for that. But,
Well, then they missed out. They missed out on those amazing...
Dark Knight trilogy, but that's another...
They missed out... Well, yes. They probably wouldn't have gotten the Dark Knight trilogy, Well, I guess, because we're just talking they didn't get to see it, because they died. I was thinking that Batman and Robin never happened. You're right. Okay, but that means they never got to see the amazing Bruce and Alfred scenes in that movie.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You know what I will say? I didn't really notice the Truman Show bit that you did, so that's a cool reference that you spotted. I didn't spot that, I wasn't thinking about it.
You see what I'm saying?
Now that you mentioned it, I can see it. And I'll be honest, I didn't see that, at least up until, you know, the very moment they started hinting at it. I didn't see that Ava being that twist coming. I didn't pick up on that. So, good on them for being able to pull that one over my eyes personally.
Once I saw the title for that episode,
that's when they gave it away.
I think he's going to be a robot, though, not a clone.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I was surprised too.
But yeah, so I think they did a good job there. One of the things the other things I loved was Which episode was it? The one where, let me see, the I got the title list right here. It was, hold on one second. The one where they go back, okay, yeah, Return of the Mac. That, for the fight sequence alone, was one of my all-time favorites of the season.
And the fight scene to the song?
Yes. I just, because I'll be honest, I don't know about you guys, but for the next day, like the day after that episode aired, I couldn't get that song out of my head.
Oh, like, me too.
It was just
me too.
Constantly, you know, in my mind. And so
But that's the episode where Damien gets resurrected, though, wow, which is what I can't stand about.
Your hang up, but what can I do? And that's really where they start keying in on the whole Mollus stuff too, you know, right? They start alluding to that. I think that was one of the first episodes where they really started keying in on that. And I, just to get off, you know, our episode walkthrough here, but I really do enjoy the Mollus stuff and the build up to that, and getting John Noble to do the voice, I thought was weird because he has such a great voice.
Former Brainiac.
Yeah, former Brainiac, but also I really like the show Fringe. So having him come on here was cool in that respect as well. And I thought the ultimate look of Mollus, I don't know about you guys, but I personally liked it. I thought it looked cool.
I agree. I was actually very, that fight scene in the, well, I guess I'll go ahead and bring it up because this was one of the episodes I was going to bring up. I thought one of the best episodes this season was actually the season finale. Oh, and yeah, seeing that fight scene at the beginning of the finale with all of them with Mollus, that was really, especially for TV, that was incredible, that fight scene. And with that episode, I just loved seeing everybody return from this season, all those different characters. I mean, Jax's return, I didn't realize how much I missed Jax until that episode, and he returns, and I was just like, oh my goodness, it's Jax again. I was so excited about that. Seeing Constantine again at the end of the episode, seeing some of the people that they'd encountered over the course of the season, like Helen of Troy came back and made a Themyscira reference.
And I'm glad you brought that up. I don't know about where your stance on this, Tom, but that whole, I think it was called Helen Hunt was the episode. Whole Helen of Troy mm-hmm. episode, I thought, I really loved it. And not for the obvious reason, because the actress was gorgeous. That's aside from the fact that's a bonus. But again, my thing about, you know, everybody's like, whenever I complain about an actress on the CW or the way the character's written, somebody always fired back, but she's gorgeous. And I'm like, well, 3/4 of the actors and actresses on the CW, it's like a prerequisite. Like if you're an average looking person, you don't get on this network.
Right.
So that doesn't win you points. But when they made that Themyscira reference in that first episode when she appeared, and then when they showed like outside of the jump ship's window and you see the Themyscira, I was that little reference, I was geeking out. I gotta be honest with you, I was totally going nuts. I'm like, there it is. And I think they sort of mimicked the look of a segment of Themyscira from the film, which was a bonus.
Sort of like that, the place where Diana looks over onto the ocean.
Yes,
in the movie.
Yeah.
Is that
and
what,
I'm like, there
yeah,
it is.
I was they're, thinking the
they,
same thing.
Know, they're pulling, and so that just got my geek meter in the going in the stratosphere. But I we got to talk about it because it factors into two things that factor into the finale. And I want to get Tom's thoughts on these two particular things before we mention them in the finale. What is your thought about how Constantine was used this season and the fact that he's going to be a series regular for next season? Tom, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I really like Matt Ryan's John Constantine, so seeing more of him is usually a good thing. And so I thought I liked how he came in, and he was Constantine. He had the attitude, he had the mannerisms, he was Constantine. And seeing more of him, that's what I like about Legends, is seeing more of those other characters that are not being used elsewhere. So seeing him was good, and I'm really excited to see him as a series regular and hopefully get to explore more of it, maybe pick up some of the stories from his own TV show. Yeah. I think I love the science fiction stuff on Legends more than the magic stuff, but as long as Constantine's doing it and it's executed well, then I don't have a problem with it. So I'm definitely seeing more of Matt Ryan's John Constantine. Definitely.
Yeah, and I thought both, like, they really, you know, I thought he's managed to just seamlessly step back into that role and bring it, like, again, no matter where whether it be Arrow or here, it feels like he's never stopped playing the role at any point in time, like, even though the show's been canceled. And it's great to see that he's kept it going, even though he hasn't gotten his own, you know, the CW hasn't outright done it, you know, committed to bringing back Constantine, but they've brought him on Legends now. But you know, with Legends and his guest appearance on Arrow, and then the animated CW Seed thing, he's really...
And Justice League Dark.
Yeah, Justice League Dark. He's really been able to stretch out the role that only went, unfortunately, one season. And they kind of played with, like, his little tryst with Sarah there. Because the character in the comics, there's a bisexuality to him, and I think the Legends is totally okay with playing with that aspect of the character. At least, it looks like they may or may not go somewhere with him and Gary, I don't know, in season four. So it seems to me like they're okay with playing with that angle of the character, and they're not really sugarcoating the character at all, which is nice to see. Because we have to talk about it because it factors into the finale as well. The use of Bebo?
Yeah, I sort of hinted at that at the top.
Firstly, as the supreme Norse god that sort of, you know, sets them on their course, and then when he makes his return. But and this again, it speaks to the versatility and the wackiness of Legends and the fact that they know what they are, and you just accept this because.
Something that came to mind with me for Bebo, and I think this is the most important thing to say about him. If you had told me when I was watching the series premiere of Arrow, the pilot, if you had told me that this show, based on basically heavily inspired by the Christopher Nolan Batman movies, and with a guy not even calling himself the Green Arrow, but just wearing like a hood and going out and taking down corrupt businessmen, right. If you told me that show would eventually have a spinoff that would involve a giant stuffed animal fighting a dragon, I would have never believed you in a million years.
Again, I think it speaks to Legends being confident in what it is, knowing its tone, that you just accept what they, more often than not, accept what they throw at you, and, you know, 9 times out of 10, it generally works. Because I'll tell you right now, had they put a giant Bebo in any one of these other Arrow shows, Arrowverse shows, I would have been complaining about it from here until the end of time.
Right? Yeah.
So, you know, so it just, like I said, it speaks to Legends is sort of embracing. This sounds bad, but it's a compliment. It embraces the ridiculousness of it all, and just come and have fun with us. That's what it is. But I like to your point, Jordan. You said it was cool to see them all coming back for the finale.
Yeah.
You know, when you see the reason I brought up Paladin was that when you have Helen of Troy, and she's basically a proto Wonder Woman kind of thing happening. That gives this show its quote unquote Wonder Woman, if they ever want to bring her on for a season or as part of the team in a future season, you can do that now,
And I have, at some point, I want her to mention, like, obviously, I don't think it's likely we'll ever see any of the other Amazons, but I would love if at some point she, like, name-dropped Hippolyta, or name-dropped even Diana. I think that would be so cool.
Hippolyta, I could see. Diana, I mean...
I could see them doing that. I mean, they name-dropped Bruce Wayne on Arrow this season.
Yeah, I could see it. That's fair. The only one that it sort of hasn't really resonated with me in terms of them all coming back, there's something about Jonah Hex that I just can't, and this is really, I mean, one of my biggest negatives. I just, whenever that guy comes on the show, I just can't get into it. I don't know what it is. It just...
Dude, I'm totally with you. It's not a problem with Jonah Hex on the show. I just find Jonah Hex to be a really boring character in general. Like, when anybody ever asks me who my least favorite DC character is, I mean, I really like most DC. I really like almost every DC character, to be honest. At least in terms of main DC heroes and stuff. But Jonah Hex has always been one that I just find so boring. Part of it's that I can't stand Westerns. That's part of it. Like, I just don't like cowboy stuff and Westerns at all. Like, I find it so boring. But, like, his character, like, I don't particularly care for the Batman Animated Series episode he's in. I don't particularly care for his live-action movie. And I don't particularly care for his appearance.
Now, hold on. Wait a second. First of all, thank God you don't care for that movie because it's terrible. But I'm shocked that coming from you, because you enjoy or you tolerate Batman and Robin more than most. And you unabashedly admit to enjoying the Catwoman movie. So the fact that you actually dislike a bad DC movie is quite a shocking development for the show.
Jonah Hex I don't like, and the Supergirl movie I don't like. So, because I've talked about that before, too. There's a couple exceptions.
On the show with your opinions. I'll say that. You're constantly shocking us on the show with your opinions. I'll say that. The cool thing was, like, the thing that just got me was when they were sort of bringing Bebo, the giant Bebo, to life with their magic totems. And you know, you'd have Jax would go in and you'd see it from his perspective. He's looking at them, but you're focused on him, and he's like, what the, and like the shock of what they're creating. I'm like, it had me. I'm like, what the hell are they? Again, because I stayed off the internet. I didn't want to read any spoilers. So I don't know if this was revealed ahead of time, but I'm like, what the hell are they creating? Like, I can't wait to see what they're creating. And then out comes this friggin', you know, this giant stuffed Beeble, and I'm like, oh my God. And Jordan's right. That fight, say what you will, I mean, as kooky and ridiculous as like, if you were to describe the finale to somebody that's never watched Legends, they'd be like, what the hell is this? Right?
But it works. Right. It totally works for that
but
show.
But when you watch that sequence play out visually, it's a really cool fight scene. And I don't know about you, but does anybody, when they saw Mollus's final form, does anybody think Man-Bat can now work in a live-action movie because of that?
I didn't think about it.
I'm like, oh, it's Man-Bat, basically.
Here's a question. Do you think Gotham will ever tackle him? Because Gotham's tackled pretty much every Batman villain at this point, with only a few exceptions. Like, they haven't done Bane, they haven't done the Ventriloquist and Scarface, and they haven't done Man-Bat. So it's like...
Gotham is crazy enough to do just about anything, so...
I think they could pull off Man-Bat on Gotham. I'm not sure... I mean, I don't think we're ever going to see... Well, if they went with, like, a sort of a horror sort of monster movie feel in the future for some live-action Batman movie, I could see that. I think it's unlikely Man-Bat will ever be the main villain of a live-action Batman movie.
My point is this, though. The seeing Mollus on Legends was sort of like a... What's the word I'm looking for?
Proof of concept?
Yeah. That Man-Bat could work in live action. It would never have crossed my mind. I mean, Tom, am I crazy here, or is that, you think that's a fair?
I don't know. That's a good point. I didn't think of that either, but I wonder now. I think it's I think visually they can make Man-Bat work, whether they would want to.
No, whether they want to be, is a different question. It's just
right.
I have never conceptualized in my head that all right, I don't think I never. If somebody asked me, would you ever want to see Man-Bat in a Batman movie? My instinctive reaction would be, I don't think it could work, so I'm gonna go with no. But now I'm like, well. Looking at Mollis, I can go with it. I can see it. So that's the point I'm trying to make. One of the other episodes that we failed to mention, and I think we should, is guest starring John Noble.
The penultimate episode.
Yes.
Of this season. Yeah.
Because two reasons I like it: the meta aspect of having John Noble as himself in the episode where
he's
voicing Mollis, I think to me that's just great. Second of all, the interactions with Ray Palmer when Ray is pretending to be like a script supervisor, and you know, quote unquote, making those changes to get his voiceover to fool Nora, and John Noble's like, who wrote this crap? Like it just made me laugh. And the whole, it's like, oh, well, we wanted to increase, because you could picture a studio executive giving those notes where they're like, well, we want to increase the female person. And he's like, yeah, but it's Lord of the Rings. You can't, you know, that whole piece of dialogue had me rolling because I could see it being something true to life that a Hollywood studio would sort of offer notes like that. And then the other aspect of it was the Barack Obama stuff. I don't want to get political here, but if you ever wondered what side of the spectrum the writers and producers of Legends fall on, just watch this episode and you'll get an idea. But
my only question with this episode in terms of that is, we've seen the president of Earth One in the Arrowverse. In fact, I think we've seen two of them, because in the Invasion crossover there was one, and I think it was a white guy. And then there was a second, there was a female president.
Well, that's on Supergirl, but she's on a different Earth, isn't she?
No, it was on Earth 1. It was because there's Linda Carter's the president on Earth 38. No, there was a female president
right.
on Earth 1.
That's, yeah. At the end of, there's the press conference at the end of Invasion when the new president takes over.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly. So when was Obama president on Earth 1 in the Arrowverse?
I think that's one of the Legends things where you're not supposed to think about it too hard.
Basically, they're like, we want to praise Obama and not Donald Trump. Let's just go with it. Like they're not trying to get continuity straight here. But
and I can sort of say my headcanon. I can headcanon it that either, I guess. Well, that was after Flashpoint, so I guess Flashpoint couldn't change something. But I could headcanon, and maybe on Earth One in this fictional universe, maybe Obama was president earlier, or something like he was president before that guy we saw in Invasion. So I can sort of I guess I can headcanon it that way. I shouldn't think too hard about it. Like I said, Legends is a show you kind of need to turn your brain off for. So I guess I can sort of.
All I'm gonna say regarding that is I dug the guy who played the young Obama. I thought vocally he did a good job, especially with Obama's speech, kind of the way Obama his inflection and stuff. And the whole thing with Ray when he's like, "Run, Barry, run!" I was dying because
yeah, that was funny.
I mean, how often is that phrase used in the Arrowverse? But in that context, it was hilarious. And then when Grodd shows up and he's like, "It's time to make America Grodd again," I laughed at that. The birth certificate bit made me laugh. So all that stuff was hilarious to me. I got to shout out that episode because the way they integrated John Noble was just a win for me, the way they did it.
Quick question for you guys regarding it sort of relates to both that episode and the finale. So I guess I'll bring it up. Has Legends, and maybe this is another example like with Obama where I just shouldn't think too hard about it, but has Legends essentially just retconned the entire Vixen animated series and her appearance on Arrow? Because now she's sharing the totem with Kuasa, and that completely contradicts, like, pretty much the entirety of the... I mean, I guess it doesn't really conflict with that much of her Arrow episode, but... Is the Vixen animated series no longer canon anymore? Like, is it, have they...
It's essentially got to be an alternate timeline now, right?
I would assume so, but from my perspective, I could be totally wrong. They're just looking at it like, well, if they're even trying to rationalize it at all, they're probably saying, well, okay, how many people really watched that CW Seed Vixen series as opposed to the main, you know what I mean? The amount of viewers that watch our show every week. You know what I'm saying?
That's fair. If that's they're just like, if they did intentionally retcon it, essentially, like, I guess I don't have that much of a problem with it. It's kind of weird to me. If their rationalization, though, was that not many people read it, not many people watch it, that irks me, because Supergirl earlier this season basically retconned their Adventures of Supergirl tie-in comics written by Sterling Gates when they introduced Psy on the show and completely ignored the fact that Supergirl had already fought Psy in the tie-in comics. Arrow has these tie-in novels, this Arrow Vengeance novel, which basically tells the story of Slade and Isabel Rochev before they showed up in season two. And then when we got that episode with Slade this season on Arrow, there was stuff in that episode that contradicted that tie-in novel, Arrow Vengeance.
Yeah, the way I look at comic book tie-ins and everything in the novels, they're basically in continuity until they're not.
Yeah,
But you see, what's the point then, Tom, what's the point of writing a story in continuity? Like, the point of writing a story in continuity is to take advantage of the continuity that's been set up that you have in that universe in a non-comic book medium. And so it's like, if they're going to contradict it later down the line anyway, why even set the comic book in the Arrowverse? Why don't just set it in a normal continuity if it doesn't matter in terms of the continuity of the Arrowverse?
I think they're ultimately banging on the fact that most of... If the hardcore viewers of the show are also consuming the tie-in comics and the novels, they're banking on the fact that they're not going to get as bent out of shape or focused on the continuity differences as you or I or, you know, some other people would. You know what I'm saying? I think they're just... And also, let's be honest, some of these things are cash grabs. Let's call them what they are from a business standpoint. So, I mean, here's the difference. The benefit of the Smallville comics is that Smallville was done. So there's nothing that's going to come in and sort of counteract that unless they do an animated series of Smallville where it says, we're not using these comics, screw it, we're going our own way.
With Smallville, though, too, in addition to the Season 11 comics, there were some comics that were written during the show's run, and there was also some prose novels, some Smallville tie-in prose novels during the show's run. So they did stuff with Smallville, too, during the show's run.
And you're saying it never contradicted?
I don't, because in terms of the Smallville ones, I haven't been able to get my hands on those. I can't get my hands on those comics, but they're not available digitally. And I haven't gotten my hands on the tie-in novels either, so I don't know.
All I can base it on, because I haven't read all that extra, like those.
I want to. If any listeners know where I can find that stuff, let me know, because I need to read that. I need little bit of more Smallville I can get.
They're available.
There's something called Amazon.
They're available trade paperbacks.
What are?
There's trade paperbacks of the comics. I've got them.
He's talking about the ones before.
You're saying the ones that were published.
Volume 1, I think it's called.
Not the Season 11 ones, but the ones during
It's during the first few seasons, and it's basically another... They're more Freak of the Week type stories. So they're sort of just one-off stories where I think there might be like a werewolf or something like that. It's been a while since I've read them, and they're the same thing with the novels. I haven't read all the novels, but they might raise some timeline questions, but otherwise they can fit into continuity.
Okay, nice. So Smallville pulled it off, as Smallville did for most things, because Smallville's the best. But my question is, Tom, you're saying, because I know I couldn't find that the comics are not available digitally, and that's where I was looking for that.
Right.
You're saying I can get all that stuff? Like, can I get the tie-in novels and those comics on Amazon, though? Can I?
Oh, yeah, anywhere. They're used copies. They're not in print, but they're
sure.
cheap. I mean, you can get the novels used for a few bucks. So novels and the comics, and they've got the individual issues as well.
Dude, thank you.
There goes his next paycheck. I don't know. I don't know, but that's the only, like I said, I can only testify to the season 11 comics. And to my knowledge, I think it's a large benefit that the show was in essence done. So then they can, you know, go from there and spin.
It's a different situation.
Whereas these TV guys are juggling all kinds of the Arrow versus a whole. So I don't think they're gonna have somebody sitting there thinking, does this tie-in novel jive with what we're, you know what I'm saying?
If they want to give me a job to just sit there and check the continuity
you can send them an email and say I'll do it, and then
I'd be happy to.
and maybe they'll hire you. There's always hope. But the other thing I think we should mention, at least I don't think we did, but when I want to give a shout out to when Sarah had the death totem.
Yes. And we saw her original canary suit.
Because I'll say this right now. I'm going to go ahead and say I don't care if anybody disagrees with me. Katie Lotz as Sarah Lance is the strongest female character in the Arrowverse, in my opinion. In terms of acting, in terms of, you know, her character, all that kind of stuff.
Are you counting the Earth 38 characters? Because Supergirl, in my opinion.
Well, I'm not going to count. I need to see more of those characters. I'm talking about the main continuity version of these characters. To me...
What do you mean? Supergirl...
I'm not talking about physical strength. I'm talking about character consistency.
Well, I know. I'm saying I think Supergirl is... I think Supergirl is a better character, just in general, than... I mean, that's not to say I don't like Sarah Lance, but I'm saying Supergirl, I think, is a better character.
That's fair. That's your opinion. But I think
a stronger character. So I was. If you disagree with me, that's fine.
I'm just asking, on the whole, for me.
Okay. So you are including the Earth-38 characters.
Katie Lotz and Sarah Lance are to me the best example of you know the way a lead female character is written and acted in the Arrowverse. So to see her sort of have that kind of an internal struggle where it's like, it's a bad comparison, but just because of the nature of the movie, but like that Superman 3 internal struggle, you know what I mean? But obviously done better than Superman 3 because, Superman 3 speaks for itself. I love that. And you're right, where she's having the vision of her former self and the original Black Canary costume, and then she's left questioning, like, her own character about am I really this way or who really am I? I think that was pulled off really well, and I really appreciated that. And I think Katie Lutz did a great job with it, and I think when she assumed the leadership role of the team, I think they showed that even better. No disrespect to Rip. I'm just saying, for me personally.
Rest in peace.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Yeah. Well, and is he really dead? We'll see.
He better be.
I'll believe it. I'll believe it when I don't see him. But
if they, well, I know I'm sort of in that skeptical mode too. But they better, if if they pull another Resurrection,
I kind of want them to bring out back just to piss you off. Like, that's at this point,
I'm gonna lose it. I'm gonna lose it.
But I think we can all agree that that was a really good moment in that episode.
Absolutely,
it had a little bit of creepiness, I think, to it. The general episode of the way they handled the Death Totem, I thought was. I would have liked to see them spend more. Like, that was one. And here, I'll say another negative. I would have liked more time with them, sort of getting sort of familiar with their totems.
I could have seen hours more of Mick trying to train with his.
You brought him up. To me, they can interchange pretty much, because they do anyway. Change most of these characters. There are three mainstays that to me need to be part of this team for this show to continue, and that is Sarah Lance, Katie Lotz, Brandon Roth as Ray Palmer, because he's phenomenal, and Dominic Purcell as Major.
He's just funny. I love him so much.
He's the stereotypical crude, brute, overflowing with machismo. You know what I mean? But it's hilarious. Like, his whole interaction with Zari, with the whole where she's eating and she's trying to diet because of she's doing that religious dietary restriction thing, because of her religion or whatever. And he just goes there and he's eating pork like it's nothing, and he's like. And his answer, like, it's so unpolitically correct, but it again, it's legends, and the way they pull it off works. Where he's like, what are you, Jewish? And the way he says it, it's just, like I love the character. And the reason why he works is because he's got no filter, just whatever comes into his brain, comes out of his mouth. Right? And so, like, even when he realized that Sarah was dating Ava, right? And she's like, oh, well, I have some business to attend to. And he's just sitting there, out of nowhere, I bet you do, you know what I mean? It's just, where is this guy coming from? It's hilarious. He's great. He's just, and I think, Tim touched on, or Tom, sorry, Tim, I don't know why I got Tim in my head, but Tom, I touched on it. The Brandon Roth as Ray Paul. He really, again, another season where I thought he shone, because to me, I'm so glad. Like, no matter how long Legends goes, I'm so happy that he's part of the DC family again, because he's just showing that he continually shows that whatever the failings of Superman Returns were, it doesn't rest on him. Because he's phenomenal in this role. And
I like that movie a lot better than you do, but he was great in that movie. I mean, I know we disagree on a lot of the rest of that movie, but I think we are on the same page. He was great in that movie, and I'm totally with you that I'm glad he's killing it as Ray Palmer too, so it's awesome to see him back again, you said.
Tom, is there anything you want to highlight before we sort of start wrapping things up, or? That we might have missed.
No, just to jump on with Ray. Yeah, Brandon Routh is fantastic. He's almost underutilized a lot of times on the show, but that's part of the ensemble cast is rotating who's the star. But he would certainly be capable of carrying his own show if he needed to.
Did you enjoy the fact that Courtney Ford, his wife, his real life wife, played
Nora Dark.
Why was it escaping me? I thought their banter in those episodes where they got to play off one another was great.
Yeah, it could have been awkward with spouses talking. Sometimes that doesn't always work, but I thought they had good acting chemistry, and so that was pretty cool to see. If you're gonna have a supporting character like that, I thought it worked well.
Jordan, is there anything you want to add before we start wrapping?
Yeah, I would say I just had two little small things I thought I'd point out. One, I thought it was I was really happy when Wally joined the team. This year, I felt that on The Flash, he didn't have the humor. He didn't bring the humor that I wanted him to. You know, I love Wally West, played by Smallville alum Michael Rosenbaum on
in the CW. Be honest, well, you just mentioned wanting to throw that line in, didn't you?
No, I did not. I did not. I did not. What I'm trying to say here is I love Wally in the DCAU. Rosenbaum did not play him in his first appearance in Superman the Animated Series, but after that, Justice League Unlimited, I love that version of him just being, you know, being the comic relief. And then I love him on Young Justice, too. Again, being the comic relief. And we didn't get enough of that on The Flash, and I feel like they've leaned into that more on Legends. Maybe that's just because Legends is, like, a goofier show, but I have appreciated that they've sort of made him a little bit more humorous on Legends than he was on The Flash. So I really liked him being an addition here. And you're going to kill me for it, but I've got another Smallville reference to bring up, is that I loved seeing Smallville alum Hiro Kanagawa, a.k.a. Principal Kwan on Smallville.
Oh, but that guy dies in every show he's in. Like, he's been on Arrow.
Yes, as soon as he died, as soon as he was ripped apart by Gorilla Grodd, on I can't remember what episode it was of Legends, but it,
it
I sent
the
out
Vietnam
a tweet
episode
with a hole.
I think, or when they got back from
it. Well, okay. I can't remember what that episode was called. But anyway, at the end of that episode, when that happened, I sent out a tweet with a poll saying, which death was more brutal, when Justin Gaines crushed him with the car on Smallville, or when he was ripped apart by Gorilla Grodd on Legends
Tomorrow? Well, you know, here's my goodbye. I may have touched on this before. But he's like the WB / CW's version of Sean Bean, the guy from Game of Thrones that always dies in everything that he's in. So there's that. But and to answer your poll, which I probably didn't see at the time, I'm going to go with Gorilla Grodd ripping him apart. That sounds more painful to me. but yeah, I mean... And just to speak to your point about Wally. So what is the status of Wally now? Is he, because I'm not 100% sure on this, I'm asking you guys, is he a series regular for season 4?
I don't know. I know they said he was joining as a series regular, but I don't know if that meant for the rest of season 3 or going forward into season 4. It seems like he's going to stick around a while, though.
Yeah, once he started showing up on Legends, they did bill him as a series regular this season. So, yeah, I'm with Tom. I don't know whether they're gonna. I mean, we'll find out eventually whose contracts they're renewing for a series regular. So I guess he's just in the same position everybody else is, where we'll see if they bring him back as a series regular. I'm assuming we're losing Amaya as a series regular, but I don't know.
On one hand is it sad because I really like the character, but at the same time, given, like I said earlier, given that relationship and her trajectory and what she needs to do in the timeline, I think, and the fact that she's got to have the kids that are splitting vixen duties, that to me is like it's an obvious that she has to go. But as much as I wish she could stay, but yeah, I wasn't sure on Wally, so I thought I'd ask you guys if you knew any different. But yeah, I say we can, if there's nothing else, we can give it we can start our rating for the season. So Tom, I'll throw it over to you. Guests go first. Give us a letter grade for season 3 of Legends of Tomorrow.
Oh, that's tricky. I'm bad at grading.
I was too, but so I had to adopt the system. So.
Yeah, I was. If you ask me a day different, I would probably have a different grade. I would put it in the B to B plus range. I think it, you know, evidence throws a lot at you, and it doesn't always stick, but they definitely hit more than they miss. And the show knows what it is now, and it's a lot of fun. And so. Yeah, I would put it. I put somewhere in the B to B plus range.
Jordan?
Yeah, I think this was the strongest season of Legends yet, to be honest. And I'm gonna agree with Tom. I'm gonna go on the higher side of what he was saying. So I'm gonna say a B plus for me, I think.
All right, cool. I'm gonna go ahead and go ever so slightly higher because I had very, very minimal gripes. They're more nitpicks than anything else, but for this season, I agree with you, Jordan. I think this season has been the best. I think it, you know, the cool thing is it's improved each season, which is always a good sign. And it's entering into season four, which has me a little bit concerned, because what I've noticed, for at least for me personally, is season four of these CW shows have tended to be the weakest so far for me. So I'm hoping that it bucks the trend. But for right now, it was the strongest of the seasons. And so I'm going to say A- for Legends Season 3. But that's going to wrap us up. Tom, thanks for coming on. We really enjoyed having you.
Thanks for having me.
Let's do some social media plugs. If people want to find you and talk DC with you on social media, where can they do that?
I'm on Twitter at KryptonTom, and the show is at DC Daily Drop. If you ever want to check
listen
that
to
out.
It, it's great. It's a quick, you know, quick they're like espresso shots of DC news, as I like to call them. So it's a great way to keep up the speed on everything that's happening, and they cover all the everything ranging from TV, movies, you name it, they cover it. So so check out the show I do on a daily basis. So that's my
It's awesome to have a podcast that you can count on every day to listen to. You always get a little bit of DC a podcast. From you guys. I get those day every day. Cool. It's awesome. Cool.
Jordan, where can people talk to you about anything DC and or Catwoman, Batman, wedding related things? Since we know you like talking about that, or
indeed I do. Indeed, I do. Yes, you could talk to me about any of that on Twitter and on Instagram at BatFanJordanV.
Awesome.
Oh, and I want to solicit some iTunes reviews. I forgot to mention that. So this is some iTunes reviews. So if you like what you're hearing from us, we'd love for you to leave us a review. And also, I'll just go ahead and mention it. Adam, I don't know if you were planning on mentioning it, but I'll go ahead and say it. Whatever. We are proud members of the Batman Podcast Network. So if you want to find other Bat-tastic Batman-related podcasts, you can go to batmanpodcastnetwork.com.
And if you want to discuss anything DC with me on social media, you can do so at Superhero Sci-Fi on Twitter. That wraps it up for this week. We hope you enjoyed it. And until next time, have a wonderful week and a great weekend. So long, everybody.
Bye-bye.